And now it's time for the Wild Side News with your host, Sydney Wildsmith.
Life in America is changing. We hear it every day. Things we've taken for granted as part of our American legacy, rights to privacy and the sanctity of our homes and lives, are being chipped away. Some people are standing up to protect their lands and their way of life, and the look of the warrior is changing. We talk with cowgirl and rancher Tweety Blanzett when your voice of the earth continues on this special edition here on the Wild Side News.
Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
NIMBY, N-I-M-B-Y. It's the acronym for Not In My Backyard, and it's been a rallying call of local residents to keep unwanted development from happening in their neighborhoods and towns. NIMBYists have opposed landfills and waste dumps, prisons and shopping malls, and it's a pretty acceptable concept for most Americans, after all. Who wants something that will denigrate one's quality of life? NIMBYs get most attention when they rally against urbanization and sprawl. And for many decades, the concept of NIMBY has applied to our public lands as well. Americans overwhelmingly want their open spaces protected. But for some, particularly in the more remote corners of America, the term has morphed into a whole new meaning, and in many cases, it's taken many years to change. Today, we take an in-depth journey into the NIMBY. But in this case, it's the story of the change from Not In My Backyard to Now In My Backyard. For some, particularly those who have traditionally shared America's public lands with others for multiple use, hunting, hiking, fishing, and resource development, there's been a give-and-take relationship to find a proper balance. But things are changing in America. And people who have shared their lands as ranchers for generations are now being driven from the land, their life, and their livelihood by a new drive to develop public lands for oil and gas exploration. We hear about these challenges regularly here on the Wild Side News. Today, we talk with Tweety Blanzett, professed cowgirl and rancher, who, along with her husband Lynn, are battling against the giant oil and gas companies who are literally driving them from the lands that have provided them a loving relationship with their land and their conservative values. It's the story of the new NIMBY. Now, it's in my backyard. So following the news, we head on out to Aztec, New Mexico. So first, the news. A team of scientists representing international conservation organizations and the National Geographic Society recently discovered a remote world of previously unknown creatures. Landing in a remote mountain forest in Indonesia's Papua province, scientists stepped out of the helicopter into a land that very likely had never been viewed or visited by humans until now. And the first impressions were stunning. A unique large egg-laying mammal with no apparent fear of humans, numerous new frog species, long-since-presumed extinct bird species were alive and thriving, and the whole was embellished with stunning new plants and flowers. It will take quite some time for all the new species to be listed and reported. Meanwhile, researchers say that the area is one of the rarest places on Earth, a place with no human footprint. However, now that it has been discovered, the news of its pristine giant forests is spreading around the world and ginning up talks of possible timber sales for the emergence of a modern China. Meanwhile, a coalition of 86 evangelical Christian leaders have decided to back a major initiative to fight global warming, warning that millions of people could die in this century because of climate change, mostly in the world's poorest nations. among signers of the statement, which was released in Washington this week, are presidents of 39 evangelical colleges, leaders of aid groups, and churches such as the Salvation Army, and pastors of megachurches. The statement included the following. For most of us, until recently, this has not been treated as a pressing issue of major priority. Indeed, many of us have required considerable convincing before becoming persuaded that climate change is a real problem, that it ought to matter to us Christians. But now, we have seen and heard enough. Thank God. Critical masses of awareness about the need to preserve the living systems are spreading far and wide. British Columbia unveiled a 16-million-acre preserve, including parkland covering an area twice the size of Yellowstone, teeming with grizzly bears, wolves, and wild salmon in the ancestral home of many native tribes. Following decades of struggles between loggers and environmentalists, the Great Bear Rainforest is the result of an accord amongst governments, Aboriginal First Nations, the logging industry, and environmentalists. It will stretch 250 miles along British Columbia's Pacific coastline. 4.4 million acres will be protected outright as parklands, while 11.1 million acres will be managed to ensure sustainable forestry with minimal impact on the environment. In a statement read by Lisa Mathaus of Canada's British Columbian chapter of the Sierra Club, she stated, British Columbians are showing that it is possible to protect the environment and provide the economic foundation for healthy communities. The innovative Rainforest Agreement provides a real-world example of how people and wilderness can prosper together. Amen. And that's the news. A few reminders. Americans for Energy Independence 2025, which launched a song contest to find the best song to get Americans to strive to achieve energy independence by the year 2025. Well, the song contest is now officially closed to new entries, and so now it's time to vote. It's easy to do so. Go to www.ei2025.org. Click on the Listen and Vote link and take it from there. Now, I'm a wild supporter of the EI 2025 mission, and that's why I submitted my own tune. It's called Feeding Them Oil Hogs, and I encourage you to take a listen. And hey, if you like it, show your support for me and the Wild Side News and Energy Independence. Who knows? Your vote may just be the one that helps launch Feeding Them Oil Hogs into the national spotlight. I'll be playing clips between segments on today's show. Remember, EI2025.org. And speaking of oil hogs, it's no secret that the struggle being waged on public lands by forces allied to maximize oil and gas exploration and those affected by such is facing dramatic new challenges as rules and regulations that have been enacted to provide a balanced use of our lands are being rewritten, loosened, ignored, and violated. Now, for most of us, these are battles we fight from our computer screens and checkbooks. But for some, the struggle is now in their backyards. We go in depth now into this new American Frontier Alliance that is changing the face of environmental activism. I spent about 25 years living in the wondrous lands of New Mexico, which for many of us who have lived there are, for extended periods of time, considered to be a most unique experience and a way of life. You have the Native American cultures, you have the artist communities, you have a very vital alternative and spiritual community, and it gives people a chance to kind of move outside of the mainstream, what all of us kind of perceive as the mainstream of America, and give us opportunities to live a whole different way of life. And joining us now is someone who certainly exhibits that in spades. Tweety Blansett is joining us from the Aztec, New Mexico area. Tweety, welcome to the Wild Side News.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be with you today.
Well, I'm glad you can, because I think you bring to this moment a way of life that a lot of people have dreamed about or have wondered what it might be like. You consider yourself two interesting things to begin with. One is a rancher, and then as well a cowgirl. Let's start out with the cowgirl side. You speak of being a cowgirl with great pride. Give us a sense of what that means.
Well, when I was much younger, I married into and I'm still married to the same man for 40 years. I married a young man that was not only a rancher, but he was also a rodeo cowboy.
Oh, boy. That's big time in New Mexico.
Yes, and we rodeoed for much of our early married life, and as well as did our children. And so the cowgirl comes from both sides. It comes from the ranch side, the practical side, and then the fun and competitive side of rodeoing.
Well, let's talk about the ranching side. You got married, and then did you move on to his family property?
Yes. When we came home from college, we purchased land that was adjacent to the historical ranch that we have now control of and we've used for at least 35 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a legacy property because his father and his grandfather were on the land before us. So it was something that was entrusted to us to pass on. And that's what we went to college for, and that's what we came home to do.
Mm-hmm. And what did you study in college?
My degree is in management. My husband's degree is in agricultural range and sciences, and also he has an animal science degree. His is more the ranch side, mine's more the management side.
That's a good combination. His family, however, goes back, and I think yours does as well, for quite a legacy into the history of ranching in New Mexico. It's a generational thing for you and for Lynn.
Yes, more for him than me. My people were more farmers than ranchers,
mm-hmm.
other than my great-grandfather, and he was a bronc buster. So I think the roots are there. The rural roots are definitely there.
Mm-hmm. What does that mean to be a rancher in that part of New Mexico? And I guess we're looking at, since you mentioned 35 years ago, this would be around 1970 is when this particular lifestyle really, with you and Lynn together, as a way of life, really began for you.
The area that we're in is probably some of the most beautiful parts of New Mexico. It's northwestern New Mexico, just below the San Juan Mountains that come out of Colorado. So we have part of the Rocky Mountain chain right here in our back door. And our ranch was on high mesas. They're pinyon juniper mesas. And beautiful, beautiful, huge Dakota sandrock cliffs and drop into big draws with, again, the pinyon and the juniper trees. It's not probably ideal ranch land like a lot of places, but it was making a good living. Our ranch headquarters is on the Animas River, so we have the farm in addition to the ranch land. The ranch is composed primarily of federal land, which we've had stewardship over for parts of three centuries because we started in it before there was a BLM and before there was a U.S. federal government because we were a territory in New Mexico in the 1800s. And we've come through a period of time that we were here before oil and gas. And all during that time, we provided stewardship to the land, both that which we own privately, our state lands and our federal lands. But through the time, from around the early 60s to the middle 70s, the increased oil and gas production started, but it wasn't such that we couldn't live with it. We were good neighbors, good friends. The people that were out in the field doing oil and gas on the weekends were ranching or rodeoing with us or farming their, you know, small farms. So it was a neighborly arrangement. If we had problems, we sat down like neighbors and worked it out. But that changed.
How big a spread do you have?
This Federal Lands Ranch is better than 32,000 acres, which is better than 50 sections. It's a large area, and it borders the Ute Reservation, the Ute Indian Reservation in Colorado, and then it's bordered on the west by the Animas River and on the east by big, huge canyons.
Yes, it's beautiful, beautiful country.
It is.
How many head of cattle would you run on that? Starting out, what kind of grow with you?
Back in the olden days, they used to run about 600 head, but they used the mesas between the Colorado line and Aztec, as well as up into Colorado. And when we kept when we quit going to Colorado with the cattle and just are on the ranch that we have today, we run about 200 head. Or we ran 200 head.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have any cattle now.
Now, just for people who don't know, when you say that this ranch involves federal lands, BLM lands, discuss a little bit how that works.
Well, back in the early 1900s, all the lands that in the West that did not have prior appropriations on them, which means that they weren't homesteaded, were put under the auspices of a government entity. And at first it started out as Forest Service, and then they broke the Bureau of Land Management off. And they allocated on these lands what they call grazing allotments. And many of these allotments, you know, passed from father to son for years, and that's the way ours did. It's historical. It is a private property right. You can buy, sell, trade them. You can combine them and reduce them. So it has that. But the land that you're actually on is all of our land. It's federal land that everybody has access to, and everybody has the right to use, not abuse, use. But we're charged with a grazing allotment on this area with the stewardship of the surface, whether it's the water, erosion, roads, that sort of thing. And I've always taken that charge pretty seriously.
As well as running cattle, for example, if there was hunting could happen on the lands.
Yes.
I can imagine that if a person decided they wanted to walk across that land, take a walk, they'd have the right to do so.
Certainly.
Mm-hmm. So it's what people refer to as multiple use, and of course that expanded as well in time to include, as the story is developing here, utilizing those lands for resource exploitation and utilization, and that's kind of where the beginning of this story really begins for you. So you're talking now about back in the 70s as you started out in this lifestyle. Did you actually see some of the first wells come in?
Actually, the first wells have been on our land since the 50s because we're what they call the fairway, and that's where the best gas reserves are. The entire ranch is in the fairway, and it's likened to the fairway of a golf course, you know, the very best lines for you to play golf.
Mm-hmm. How many wells were there at the time that you took over?
Oh, there were probably less than 50.
50?
In the 32,000 acres. Less than 50, I would say.
I know that one of your concerns is the fact that when you were starting out, as you said earlier even, the relationship between you and the people involved in gas exploration and drilling was really on a person-to-person basis.
Yes, it was. Definitely.
So they as well had a concern for you as a neighbor, and you as well for their right to make a living.
Certainly. We were in school in the 60s and 70s when multiple use really came into play, and we certainly bought into it. We felt like the public lands, federal lands, should all be used for all the people, and each of us should be able to exercise our leasehold rights, but also enact our responsibilities that are associated with those rights.
Mm-hmm. And particularly on the federal lands that are designated for those purposes. Well, that was the 70s. Give us a sense of how things progressed.
Well, I think it was the late 70s, early 80s when we saw a tremendous breakup of large corporations. And our entire ranch was owned primarily by two companies. So if you had a problem, you knew who to go to. Right now on the ranch, we have 8 major transportation lines with different companies, and we have 2 companies that run gathering lines, and 17,000 of the 32,000 acres are impacted by the gathering lines.
Now, what's a gathering line?
A gathering line is the line that brings the gas from the wellhead to a gathering system.
And what's that look like when you actually see it?
Well, that's the reason I mentioned it, because it's a spider web of connections, and with every pipeline and well, there's also a road that's associated. We have better than 800 miles of road in 32,000 acres and over 500 wells. And it's a major pipeline corridor, too, for the entire West that runs right through the heart of the ranch. So we've gone from is a very viable ranching enterprise to a commercial oil and gas field.
The change comes slowly, and it's sometimes it's hard to appreciate where it's going. At what point did you say, gosh, something seems to be going wrong here?
Well, it started really the early 90s, 1990s, with the event of coal bed methane. And prior to that time, no, coal bed methane was what we called a trash gas. They just vented it in the air, and it was more trouble than it was useful. But with our wonderful modern technology, we were able to take a trash product and make it a very viable product for all the American public, and that was wonderful. The problem was is with the event of these huge resources of coal bed methane, the extraction process for this type of gas was just filthy. I mean, it's dirty, dirty process. It wasn't like some of the earlier explorations for natural gas in our area, which had a small footprint, had very little damage to the surface. These wells came in with huge locations, 5 to 10 acres. The companies that came in had diversified. They had no corporate feelings about the community or about the people that were on the land that they were supposed to be sharing it with. They had what they considered trumped rights as far as the mineral dominant over the surface. And their political buying power was tremendous. And so the people that are on the land and have been on the land were out-trumped by major multinational corporations. And you say, well, it's a small area in northwestern New Mexico, but I'd just like to give you one figure. In San Juan County last year, we generated $8 billion in settlement revenue. This isn't a little project. The major players in the entire world are in the San Juan Basin. And like I said, their political buying power is rather significant. Pretty much what they wanted, they got. And the bigger the corporation, in my opinion, the worse the abuse was.
Giant corporations are drawing more than just lines in the sand with the cowgirls and ranchers of the great western lands of America. How'd this all come to be? It wasn't always this way. We find out when your voice of the earth returns here on the Wild Side News.
Well, I'm standing on the corner. The street lights just went out. I hear people screaming from the rooftops that the oil just ran out. I'm just living in the darkness every night and every day. 'Cause when the oil goes out, the lights don't shine, and no one really likes it all this way. 'Cause I'm feeding them oil hogs. We keep feeding them oil hogs. 'Cause we're feeding